Lord.
Deciding to stop by and hang out for a while, huh? Have a good weekend? Did you go get married? If you live in New York and happen to be gay? No, you didn't? Okay, this hour is sponsored by Christopher K. His message, support independent media, like the new Majority Report with Sam Cedar. Available at majority.fm via live stream daily at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, Stitcher.com on your smartphone, or Achieved Podcast on iTunes. Well, that's nice. Thank you, Christopher. Our good friend Sam Cedar. We spent some time over the weekend talking with friends about the ruling by the Senate in New York. Well, the whole legislature now, and the fact that Cuomo... Has Cuomo signed the bill? About equal protection under the law for a class of people who have been denied equal protection under the law and continue to be denied equal protection under law in 41 of these glorious United States of America. 41 states choose to deny equal protection under the law. Why? Well, there's only one answer, and that is religious sickness. Religious sickness. There is no other reason to deny people the right to form a contract. A contract that involves those two people deciding to live as best they can, as best as any married couple can, dedicated to each other, sharing their lives together, living in privacy, doing things like, oh, I don't know, going into debt, making a living, maybe raising children, maybe having children, maybe adopting children, maybe not, cooking dinner, taking trips together. If somebody gets sick, being able to visit that person in the hospital. If one of the two people in this contract decide they want to leave their Social Security benefits, make that decision, but that person would be eligible for those benefits, or whatever. It just goes on and on. But because of religious bitchiness, bigotry, ridiculousness, asininity, in other words, the usual creepy religious crap, 41 states in the United States, and every single Republican candidate for president and the sitting Democratic president would all deny equal protection under the law to a certain class of people, certain group of people. Barack Obama should know better. I can remember living in Richmond, Virginia. Yes, it wasn't that long ago. Living in Richmond, Virginia, when a black person and a white person, if they got married, were both subject to imprisonment. It was illegal. A black person and a white person could not form a contract where concerned marriage. Can you believe that? Jim in Burlingame, California, sent me an email. He says, Mike, so gay marriage has passed in New York. My congratulations to all the happy couples to be. Now, for the rest of us, please note that this did not happen because various gay and civil rights groups did any of the following. One, compromise. They didn't do that, did they? Two, waited for Nancy Pelosi to be reinstated as Speaker of the House. They didn't do that either, did they? Waited for Obama to find his inner liberal. Waited for Pelosi and Obama to compromise with Republicans. Acted polite at demonstrations. Compromised. Reached out to opponents on TV news programs and in the editorial pages. Waited for Democrats to amass 60 seats in the Senate. Or compromise. I know. It was fought as a state issue in a state legislature, but gays are continuing to fight in all the other states with the same essential methods. The most important being they fight. And they don't care who's in office and who the hell doesn't like it. Win or lose, their constituents hear the message and know they are not alone, and so the fight goes on. When was the last time you heard the Democrats talk about the minimum wage, even as rent, gas, and food costs devour most workers' paychecks? These poor working bastards never hear it. And it is as if they have locked themselves in the closet. So come on, everybody. Release your inner gay person. Fight. 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 Jim in Burlingame, California. Release your inner gay person. Mine would come out, but he's scared. No, he's not. He's been out for a long time. He really has. Oh, my God. Ever since since I was in, what, my early 30s, I guess? Yeah. Obama. What a loser. What a cowardly loser, non-leader this guy is, Obama. I'm so tired of over issues like this, especially. I mean, okay, I know he's following directly in his predecessor's footsteps as far as being a warmonger, as far as being a killer of innocent people, as far as being somebody who disrespects international law, not to mention U.S. law. Okay. But where it concerns gay marriage, don't you think Barack Obama would have had a little bit of courage, just a little bit, instead of all the goddamn weasel words this man has been offering? Well, I work to end defense of the United States will no longer support in lawsuits the Defense of Marriage Act. Don't ask, don't tell. Finally get rid of that under my watch. New York Times says on Thursday night, when same-sex marriage in New York State was teetering on a razor's edge, President Obama had a perfect opportunity to show the results of his supposed evolution on gay marriage. Unfortunately, he didn't take it. Oh, no kidding. Obama never leads. When has the man led? Hello? Anybody? Come on, I know there are a lot of Obama supporters listening to this program, and I know it really pisses you off. Some of it makes you turn the dial. Some of you, when you, oh, there he goes, off on one of his anti-Obama rants, I can't listen to this. I just can't listen to it, because if we don't have Obama, what's going to happen to the Supreme Court? You're not serious, are you? Yeah, I know you are. The Republican-led New York State Senate, of all places, as the Times says, proved itself more forward-thinking than Obama on one of the last great civil rights debates in this nation's history. Speaking to the Democratic Party's Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Leadership Council, LGBT Leadership Council. See, this is the part that really gets me. I guess it gets the New York Times, too, although they don't use words like goddamn and, you know, like I do. And by the way, that's not a curse word. It is an invocation of to God, even though I don't believe in such a thing, to damn something. You know, taking the Lord's name in vain, you freaks it right to me. Say, you always take the Lord. No, I don't. You know what taking the Lord's name in vain is? It's when you try to get money from somebody who is desperate to believe in your crazed religion. So you just say to them, oh, okay, well, here, send in $20 and I'll send you a prayer cloth. That's taking the Lord's name in vain. Or every Sunday in the pews when they take up a collection. Didn't Jesus drive the money? Oh, I'm God. This is not church night. Anyway, the New York Times did not use the words like goddamn, and I will. And I will when we come back, because I have more to say about this. So as the Times said in editorial yesterday, you know, where was Barack Obama where it concerns the action by the New York State Legislature? At a fundraiser in New York, Obama ran through the many efforts, the Times says, that he has made on behalf of gay rights, including his decision to end the government-supported Defense of Marriage Act, blah, blah, blah. And did I say that there are six states now that permit same-sex marriage? What I said was there are 41 that did not. Actually, I guess that's 44 that do not. It's just, I don't know. In the Times says, in the 2008 campaign when Obama said he supported civil unions and believed marriage should be between men and women, he... you know, obviously wanted to appeal to the voters who are slightly more conservative than he is. And after he took office, it became evident that Republicans intended to portray him, when it became evident that Republicans intended to portray him as a radical, out-of-touch leftist no matter what he did, I guess he decided supporting same-sex marriage at that point is hardly going to change that drumbeat. Or any voter for whom that is a make-or-break issue... yeah, he'll probably not be an Obama supporter anyway. So what's the problem with Barack Obama? Is it his own personal belief? Is his own personal belief interfering with equal protection guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States? Equal protection includes being able to enter into a contract for marriage. Any synagogue, temple, church, mosque, whatever else, whatever kind of religious nonsense is held in these various buildings, any one of these that do not want to sanction a marriage don't have to. Who in the hell said they ever did? But how many contracts originate in a church? Maybe an employment contract, and even that is watched over by the state. A marriage contract does not originate in any religious organization. Since that is the truth, at least not in this country, why should any religious organization have the power to deny a legal contract between two people, a contract issued if the qualifications are met by the state? What are the qualifications? Well, you have to be above a certain age. Right? What else? Well, in some states, you can't marry your brother and sister or even a first cousin. Why not? Because the state has an interest in making sure that people are not born who are genetically deformed because of that and then become wards of the state. That's a legitimate concern. What else? Rick Santorum, what does he believe? A man on dog. Well, first thing you know, a man will be showing up to marry a dog. You dumb son of a bitch, Santorum. Why don't you crawl back in your hole and rot? And then you hear these other people, well, you know. You allow that to happen, next thing you know, they'll want to marry two or three of these guys, Will. Well, what's to stop polygamy? Well, ask that to two of the contenders for president of the United States on the Republican ticket. They both come from religious cults that still, to some degree, believe that. And the ones that say, well, yeah, I'm a Mormon, but I don't believe that. Take a good look. They've got their fingers crossed. Because when the time comes, of course, they jump out of their closet and say, oh, no, we're just kidding. We do believe in polygamy. We do believe in polygamous marriages. Because our avatar, Joseph Smith, said it was okay. Sick, 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 sick. So where was Obama? Where was Obama? I like this. The Times says, firm support for gay marriage is, on the other hand, likely to help him among his cheerless base. Good sentence. Cheerless base. He signed the United Nations Declaration on Gay Rights. What does that mean? What does it mean when you sign a UN Declaration on gay rights, including everything up to being allowed to enter into a contract that is protected by the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution of the United States. At that point, Obama draws a line. Anybody who draws a line there is demonstrating one of two things, or both of two things. Their religious bigotry, or their utter disrespect for the Constitution of the United States. You can't have it any other way. It's either one of those or both of those. We'll be back in a minute.
It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Christopher Kay, who has a message here. Support independent media like the new Majority Report with Sam Cedar, available at majority.fm via live stream daily at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Stitcher.com on your smartphone or archived podcast on iTunes. Thank you, Christopher. And good plug for Sam Cedar. What more is there to say about this issue of denying a certain segment of the population equal protection under the law? I mean, what? What? Why is this an issue? And the answer very simply is because of the religious crazy people in this country who have made it an issue. It's just, it's madness. And I would dismiss it altogether except for one very salient fact, and that is an awful lot of people in this country are forced to suffer because the dominant culture, which is chock-a-block with these stupid-ass religions, continue to make them suffer. So it's not funny. Gay violence, The denial of human rights to people having to be gay? What the hell business is it of anybody's who forms a contract? I mean, Jesus H, please. What? Do you, if you're against gay marriage, do butt your ass in when somebody, how about if a gay person goes to sell me a house? Are you going to butt your ass into that too? Are you going to say to me, no, you can't do that. Why can't I do it? Because the person selling the house is gay. Well, we're just making a contract. Bruce writes, you can't blame Rick Santorum for being confused about a man marrying a dog and laws being needed to prevent such abominations. His type see marriage as a man acquiring property. Two men marrying is super confusing since who owns who? Two women would simply be impossible since neither can own property. At least with a dog. It would be clear who owns who, but in Rick's case, not so clear on which would be smarter. Thank you, Bruce. Ay, 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 ay. Jamie writes, hey, Mike, no matter what the issue, whether it's supportive workers, marriage for same-sex couples, or saving social programs and preserving the social compact, if it's something that actually helps people, Obama's line is, make me. I realize that's a very short list of things he should stand for and support. But I think that's what disgusts me more than anything, that he has to be forced to do the right thing. Gee, Mike, isn't a person or character supposed to do the right thing regardless of external forces? Obama doesn't even take advantage of the bully pulpit and forcefully push back rhetorically, which is the very least he should do. He is weak, and his lack of conviction is a big reason why I won't be voting for him in 2012. As far as I'm concerned, President Obama is part of the problem. Jamie. Yeah, okay. No point belaboring the point. Jamie makes it. I agree. Obama has proven himself incapable of being a leader. He is an historical figure, but he is not a leader. He does not lead. At a time when we are desperately looking for leadership, what is the political system giving us? This crazy goddamn Bachman woman? Mitt Romney, who is displaying the fact that he is an absolute coward? Is this a guy that America is supposed to go, oh, yeah, okay, Romney, when you were in Massachusetts, you did some pretty liberal things. In other words, some pretty rational things. And now you're running against your own record. You cowardly son of a bitch, you. You cowardly son of a bitch. So, Paul Enty, what's he about? Huntsman? The Vespa motor scooter boy? We need leadership, and we have people like Michelle Bachman and Barack Obama. That's great. Okay. Moving right along. An atheist in Central Florida filed suit in federal district court in Tampa on Friday. Excuse me, according to New York Times, accusing the Polk County Sheriff, who happens to be an evangelical Christian, of harassing her and unnecessarily arresting her as retaliation for her not believing in God and for her efforts to keep prayer out of public meetings. Ellen Beth Wachs is her name. She is the legal coordinator for a group called Atheists of Florida. She asked the court, Federal District Court in Tampa, to prevent the sheriff, Grady Judd, from conducting any new investigations, arrests, or complaints resulting from her, quote, non-religious atheist viewpoint in the predominantly Christian-oriented Polk County, Florida, end quote. The sheriff's actions, including two arrests and searches of her house, violated her First Amendment rights and her right to due process, according to her lawsuit. Here's what's happened. She's a vocal advocate for the separation of church and state. Ooh, boy, you don't want to be that. You don't want to do that in America 2011. With everything going down the toilet, people reach for their Bibles and their Qurans and their whatevers and their guns. Eh? She's an advocate for the separation of church and state. And she's attended several school board meetings where sessions begin with prayer. And what she asks is that instead of a prayer, just a moment of silence be observed. Huh? See, then you can bow your head and pray to Lord Satan if you want to, or to the tree out in front of the school, or to a chair, or to a Christian god, or a Muslim god, or any of several Hindu gods. You see, in the privacy of your own head, you can do whatever you want. But the Christians don't want that. The evangelical Christians say, no, that doesn't count. It doesn't count? No. It's what you say out loud. But Jesus said not to do that. Ah, we don't give a goddamn what Jesus said. But Jesus specifically said not. We don't care. Oh. She asked in a moment of silence to be observed. Now the sheriff. And what do you want to bet this guy is a pedophile? What do you want to bet he's a pedophile? And I'll tell you why in a second. The sheriff, according to the New York Times, is equally committed to Christian values. That is to stomp on other people, to use the power of the state to harass and arrest them if they don't believe the way you believe. Is that what you're trying to say in the New York Times? He is committed to Christian values? Are those Christian values? Well, I guess the Times is right. Those are Christian values. He has received national attention for his focus, here it comes, on rooting out pornography. What do you want to bet his computer is just dripping with pornography, rooting out pornography as well as pedophiles? Huh? So here is an evangelical Christian willing to use his Bible as a bludgeon to beat other people into submission. His Bible and his badge and his gun and his little police car and his siren and the little blue lights to go on and off. He's willing to do that because, you know, he's against pornography and people who object to out loud anti-Jesus, because Jesus said, don't do it, prayers. And he's trying to stomp out child pornography, pedophilia. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet that this guy's a pedophile? If they ever take a look at his computer, OMFG, what they're going to find. Anyway, all this started between Ellen Beth Walks, who lives in Lakeland, and Sheriff Judd. It started last year when the sheriff removed the basketball hoops from the Polk County Jail and donated them to local churches. He took them out of the jail and gave them to churches. Now, that's another thing. Didn't Jesus say something about the way you treat prisoners? Huh? This guy's going to burn in hell. This guy is going to turn into a crispy critter when he kicks off. Not that any of that is true, but somebody will go up to him and say, look, you know, you're stomping all over Jesus's tongue. Wouldn't do that if I were you, pal. You know, if you really believe what you say, all this garbage about praying out loud when Jesus told you not to do that, and mistreating people in prison when Jesus specifically told you not to do that. And as far as you're being a pedophile, Sheriff, remember what he said about suffer the little children to come unto him? You're in a world of trouble, pal. We'll be right back. 10 before the hour. I'm almost sure of this. I do want to talk about the Gaza flotilla. Also, the I have a Prairie 2 thing here. Some stuff about Bachman. Do you know they've discovered now a liberal gene? The Supreme Court ruling today. And Los Alamos is about to catch on fire. And reactors, a reactor in, both reactors in Nebraska are being threatened with flood water. How about this? Anyway, let me just finish up with this woman in Lakeland, Florida. This is Ellen Beth Walks and this crazed sheriff, Grady Judd, who uses the power of his office to harass this woman because she's asked for a moment of silence rather than a Christian prayer to be used at the beginning of official business, county business, school board business, tax assessor business. You know, it's against the law, and it's also contraindicated, as they say on your medicine, your prescription jar. It's contraindicated by Jesus H. Christ himself. So where did the problem begin between these two? The sheriff removed basketball hoops from the Polk County Jail and gave them to local churches. Now, the basketball hoops obviously were paid for with tax money. The church is tax exempt. The church couldn't afford a couple of goddamn basketball hoops? You kidding me? This angered Ms. Walks, so she filed several public records requests on the matter. She is a non-practicing lawyer. She signed the request with the designation Esquire after her name. You ever get a letter from a lawyer? Joe Smith, Esquire. Okay, it's a designation, like John Smith, M.D. Or Ralph Smith, R.N. Or, you know, whatever. Susie Smith, M.D.? Okay, excuse me. Anyway, she used Esquire after her name, and Sheriff Judd sent a team of officers to arrest her and charged her with illegally posing as a lawyer, which is a felony. Her lawyer said, this doesn't violate any bar rules. She's entitled to, allowed to use Esquire. She was arrested a second time, a couple of months later, for moaning like, repeatedly in a sexual manner from an open door in her own house, saying, oh, John, as a ploy to stop neighbors, including a young boy, from playing basketball and making a lot of noise outside her house. Oh, John.
Oh, Martha.
John! The police searched her house and took away a safe. Anyway, the moans followed a dispute with a neighbor, and the sheriff's office arrested her on a felony sex charge. She's standing in her doorway going, Later that month, the police arrested her again and charged her with possession of marijuana after saying they had found drugs in the safe. Jesus Christ! You think it's easy being an atheist when you're up against Christian sheriffs? It kind of like the early Christians felt up against Roman emperors. Huh? Her attorney said, quote, we are asking a federal judge to put a stop to this madness. We want to try to stop a rogue sheriff who is abusing his authority as a law enforcement officer to punish a vocal atheist in town for her viewpoint and political beliefs. And you know, you want to know how many of the good citizens of Polk County are just celebrating what Grady Judd, how many people in Polk County are just salivating, slobbering over themselves. How many preachers are getting up this past Sunday, yesterday, and talking about good old Grady Judd, Sheriff Judd, he's out here protecting us from these horrible atheists. You know, the atheists, they want to kill God. They already got God out of the schools and then they start foaming at the mouth and there's nothing left to hear. It's pretty astonishing when you stop and think about it. Here we are in, more than a decade into the... Into a new century, a new millennium. When did the new millennium start? Oh, who cares? And we have these people remind me of the witch burners. That's exactly what they are. Whether it is against gay folk making a contract so they can get married, or an atheist saying, look, I'm not imposing my views on you. I really am not, Sheriff. You can do whatever kind of Christian craziness you want to do. But this is a public meeting. This meeting is run under the laws of the state of Florida. And the laws of the state of Florida, to some extent, are governed by the laws of the United States. And you cannot mix government and God. Don't you understand that, Sheriff? Now, how does the sheriff respond? He starts pounding a stake into the ground and ordering people to bring brush and telling them that they're going to have an atheist barbecue very soon. We'll be back. Stay with us. The hour. I forgot to mention it the third time last hour, so I mentioned it again. The first hour is sponsored by Christopher Kay. His message, support independent media like the new Majority Report with Sam Cedar. Available at majority.fm via live stream daily at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Stitcher.com on your smartphone or on iTunes, go to the archived podcasts. All right. Thanks, Christopher. And, everybody, do that. Tune in to Sam Cedar, will you please? here we go again. Where is that damn thing I had? Well, I had it in front of me. As you probably know by now, On Sunday, Israel threatened to bar for up to 10 years any foreign journalist who boards a flotilla seeking to challenge an Israeli naval blockade of Gaza. There are a dozen ships, I guess, or 10, 12. They are activists. They're always identified as pro-Palestinian. And I think that's unfair, because what they are is anti-apartheid activists. They are demanding that there be a solution to the situation between Israel and the Israelis and the Palestinians that doesn't involve the Israelis treating the Palestinians like they were like the South African white South Africans treated black South Africans for decades, a century. It's very simple. It's a very simple situation. So there are a number of activists who are symbolically going to set sail in various boats from various countries. The U.S. has a ship in this, filled with U.S. activists who are bringing letters. Other ships are bringing supplies that are needed by the Gazans. Now, Eric Bronner, writing in the New York Times the other day, pointed out that a lot of these ships that are bringing supplies are not needed now because the denial of entry through Egypt has been dropped, and the Israelis are starting to back off a little bit. Eric Bronner is going to write the pro-Israeli point of view for the New York Times no matter what. I mean, that's just a Ethan Bronner. I'm sorry. Ethan Bronner. There is no way that Ethan Bronner is going to approach that issue other than from the point of view of the Israelis. Period. I mean, come on. So the latest breaking news that comes from Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, is that this threat by Netanyahu to ban any journalist who covers this from entry into Israel for a decade has been dropped now. Just in the past few hours, it has been dropped. But let me back up. Oren Hellman, the director of the government press office. Yes, they have a government press office. They have censors in Israel. So, you know, when you hear about it's a democracy among dictatorships, the second part of that is right. They're nothing but dictatorships all around Israel. But the Palestinians do not operate under a dictatorship. Syria does. Egypt does. Saudi Arabia does. Libya does. Iran does. Iraq does. Anyway, the director of the government press office sent a letter to registered foreign correspondents on Sunday saying that the flotilla scheduled to sail this week was illegal. Really? Sailing from international ports across international waters to land on the soil of a country that Israel does not... It's not Israel. It is Gaza. But never mind. Never mind. That landing, sailing with the flotilla and landing on Gaza was illegal, and the participating in it, even as a reporter, was, quote, liable to lead to participants being denied entry into the state of Israel for 10 years, to be impounded of their equipment, and to additional sanctions, end quote. Freedom of the press? Israel? You got to be kidding. So, Oren Hellman, the director of the government press office, demanded that his message be sent to editors around the world. Israel's Foreign Press Association replied by calling on Mr. Hellman to reverse his decision, saying journalists, quote, covering a legitimate news event should be allowed to do their jobs without threat and intimidation, end quote. That's from Israel's Foreign Press Association. The Foreign Press Association of Israel added that Oren Hellman's directive, quote, sends a chilling message to the international media and raises serious questions about Israel's commitment to freedom of the press, end quote. Late today or early tomorrow, such is the case in Israel, this was Prime Minister Netanyahu rescinded this decision. They issued a statement, quote, "When the matter was brought to his attention, the prime minister, that would be Netanyahu, directed that the regular policy against infiltrators and those who enter Israel illegally not be implemented." The regular infiltrators enter Israel illegally? This is Gaza. The statement went on, "It has also been agreed that members of the Israeli and international media will be attached to Israel Navy vessels in order to create transparency and credible coverage of the events." The Foreign Press Association, which had condemned this decision, issued a statement. Quote, "We are pleased to see that Israel has recognized the value of allowing reporters to cover an important news event and understands that journalists should be treated differently from political activists." Well, that's true. Now, remember the last time, it was a big story on the German television network ARD, last year's flotilla. It was a big story all over. 9 people were killed. There's no telling what's going to happen this time. But you know that Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have more or less indicated that you're on your own if you're an American and you do this. About 10 vessels from European ports are going to sail to Gaza to protest Israel's control of Gaza's water, you know, offshore. Israel says its blockade is aimed at stopping arms and rockets from arriving in Gaza. And Ethan Bronner writes, which is run by the militant group Hamas. That's how Ethan Bronner puts it. Listen to the sentence. Israel says its blockade is aimed at stopping arms and rockets from arriving in Gaza, which is run by the militant group Hamas. I don't know Ethan Bronner from Adam's Housecat, except that he works for the New York Times, but surely he has some experience in journalism, and surely he knows that that sentence never should have made it past the Times editors. Run by militant group Hamas. No, Ethan, Hamas was elected by the people of, I mean, what are you going to say? That the United States is run by Barack Obama? Run by? Jesus Christ, no, that's what a mafia organization does in Brooklyn. They run the crime syndicate. The people of Gaza elected. Oh, never mind.
Trouble, all trouble move from me. I have paid my debt, now won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble, trouble, please be kind. I don't want no fight, and I haven't got a lot of time.
Thou shalt be.
Journalists, including one from the New York Times, has signed up to cover the flotilla by joining the activists on board. And you remember 13 months ago, Israeli commandos boarded a Turkish vessel whose crew and passengers were seeking to block this seeking to break the blockade. And here's Ethan Bronner again, facing resistance, killed 9 people aboard. You know, the New York Times has a public editor, and on Sundays I usually read his column and how he tries to negotiate the interests of the public through the Times editorial board, and not just the editorial board, but the writers who work for the New York Times. I have, on the one hand, a lot of respect for the New York Times in that it is a national newspaper. And it does employ some op-ed writers and some journalists who I have great respect for. But to see the constant presentation of the situation between Israelis and Palestinians in a way that is sometimes subtle, sometimes not so subtle. And sometimes it's very pro-Palestinian in its approach. But when it is not, and that's usually when Ethan Bronner writes a piece about it, it is so condescending, and if that's the right word to use when you're dealing with people's very existence, their lives, their deaths, they're being treated like fourth-class citizens in what they consider to be their own country. I just wish that there was a better way for Ethan Bronner to describe the government of Gaza rather than saying Gaza, which is run by the militant group Hamas. Is the Likud party militant? Mr. Bronner. The Likud party that promotes illegal settlements. Is that militant? Well, Mr. Bronner's not here, so there's no point in my talking into the wind. Some of the vessels that are going to take part this year bringing construction equipment, humanitarian aid, including medicine, and then Bronner says, but the real purpose of the flotilla, Ethan Bronner would know, the real purpose of the flotilla is less to deliver goods and building supplies than to challenge Israel's control over Gaza's borders. The American vessel, for example, he writes, will not be loaded with any goods. No, it won't. According to the people on that boat, it'll be loaded with letters of support for the people of Gaza. And then he writes, 2.5 years ago, when Israel invaded Gaza to stop Hamas from shooting rockets at Israeli communities, about 8,000 had been fired. The Israeli military barred reporters from entering Gaza to report on the war. That sentence is another one that just, it grates on me. I mean, it is so infuriating that the Times would report it that way. But Ethan Bronner is a respected journalist and has the backing of the New York Times, so who am I to challenge that, right? Kathy Kelly, coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence, she wrote the piece Staying Human, Preparing to Sail to Gaza. It says, quote, last week, newly arrived in Athens, Greece, as part of the U.S. boat to Gaza, our team of activists gathered for nonviolence training. We are here to sail to Gaza in defiance of an Israeli naval blockade in our ship, the Audacity of Hope. The Audacity of Hope. Gee, where have I heard that before? Our team and 9 other ships' crews from countries around the world want Israel to end its lethal blockade of Gaza by letting our crews through to shore to meet with Gazans. The U.S. ship will bring over 3,000 letters of support to a population suffering its 5th continuous decade of de facto occupation, now in the form of a military blockade controlling Gaza's sea and sky, punctuated by frequent deadly military incursions that has starved Gaza's economy and people to the exact level of cruelty considered acceptable to the domestic population of our own United States. Israel's staunchest ally. There's more here. Stick around. So if I can't you grab it, then
microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So this week, this flotilla of 10 different boats are scheduled to sail from different ports in Europe. One of the boats will contain Americans who are, including people like Alice Walker, Ray McGovern, Anne Wright. I think Medea Benjamin is going to be among that group. And other people. I don't mean to minimize the other people by not mentioning them, but these are names I think that we're all familiar with. Anyway, Kathy Kelly also is going to be on one of those boats, the American boat, and she wrote, continuing with what she wrote this week, Israel Defense Forces are reportedly training for a fierce assault intended to, quote, secure, end quote, each boat in the flotilla. As passengers specifically on the U.S. boat, we may be spared the most violent responses, although Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has not ruled out such violent responses and has preemptively certified any response we may, quote, provoke is an expression of Israel's, quote, right to defend themselves, end quote, even though the boat will be sailing from international waters to a coastline that is not part of Israel. Israel says it is prepared for a number of scenarios ranging from a ranging, quote, from no violence to extreme violence. We are preparing ourselves not to panic and to practice disciplined nonviolence, whatever scenario Israel decides to enact. And then there's this. Gypsy writes, Mike, I don't know if you're keeping up with the news from Greece and the problems they're having setting sail on the Audacity of Hope ship. Someone sent me something so alarming from Ray McGovern's blog. Here it is. Quote, this is from Ray McGovern. Quote, I also have been cautioned by a source with access to very senior staffers at the National Security Council that not only does the White House plan to do absolutely nothing to protect our boat from Israeli attack or illegal boarding, but that White House officials, quote, would be happy if something happened to us, end quote. They are, I'm reliably told, quote, perfectly willing to have the cold corpses of activists shown on American TV, end quote. This is Ray McGovern's blog. You can find it if you want to. Anyway, Gypsy writes, I realize now that we who are anti-war activists will be labeled terrorists very shortly. What really bugs me, though, is the horrible feeling that some so-called liberal talk show hosts would be okay with that. Maybe I'm getting too paranoid. Anyway, what's this? There's a petition to SiriusXM to stop playing the thing about the truth is on the left. I don't know what that's about. I really don't. I'll find out, though. The truth is on the left. Where else would it be? Damn sure isn't it. The only thing that SiriusXM does is very irritating to me, and I've complained about it. And that is the right-wing Nazi channel is labeled Patriot, and the liberal side is labeled Left. Now, that's irritating. And I've mentioned it to the one executive at Sirius that I know. I mentioned a long time ago, nothing ever happened. But I don't quite get that, you know. The right-wing station is Patriot, and the liberal station is Sirius Left. So what am I going to do about it? Nothing. We got time. I think I can do this from Prairie 2. Under the subject, we call it capitalism. He writes, Greece has accepted its fate and will institute draconian austerity measures mandated by the International Monetary Fund, including massive layoffs and pay cuts designed to destroy the Greek economy. The more permanent damage, however, will be done by a new so-called independent agency set up to liquidate any public assets the transnational corporations find attractive. What he's writing about here is what has happened to Greece and how the predators, the capitalist predators, are about to swoop down and start picking at the corpse, the sons of bitches. Anyway, Prairie 2 goes on. This isn't a new scam. The IMF has been looting and pillaging the third world for more than 30 years, but this is the first big haul in Europe. The right-wingers are constantly squawking about how we must learn from the failure of Greek socialism and institute austerity here or become just like Greece. Quote, they ran up huge debt, you know, end quote. In fact, their debt is only 50% of GDP, which is lower than most countries in this modern financial services-dominated world economy. The rude awakening for the right, and really for most Americans, would be to find out that the thing we have in common with Greece is not so-called socialism, but that we, too, have a phony debt crisis brought on by the same Wall Street criminals. The goals are the same. The same austerity is already being forced upon us, with the goal of crashing the economy. And here, too, public assets are being sold off to transnational corporations. The most likely scenario is that they will pull back from the brink of total collapse in the United States and simply maintain as much pressure on the middle class as will be tolerated. But no real recovery will be allowed. Middle class wealth will continue to drain away here in these states, and the average standard of living will continue to decline until the whole concept of a so-called middle class will go down the memory hole. Well, by the way, the chocolate allotment has always been 2.5 grams. Anyway, even now, almost no Americans grasp the concept of wealth. A house, even if you can afford one, is not an asset, but really a liability. And a 401k is a cruel joke. They sold these things as a substitute for the pension plan, and all they are is a way for Wall Street to harvest more middle-class wealth, passing it to the rich and to the so-called managerial class. Now, remember that term. In the olden days, before 1981, the average American aspired to real wealth, to own a business or a farm, to become a professional with their own practice or a tradesman, with ongoing business that could be passed on to the next generation. If one chose to work for a big company or the government, then a pension could be counted on. Today, the entire country is being Walmartized, where nobody holds any real wealth and considers themselves lucky to make enough to live on until being cast aside. This will also be a rude awakening for many of the Republican base who sold the family business after generations in exchange for a large stack of paper. They may be living well now, but only until the next flash crash wipes them out. If they're still hanging on to real wealth, they might consider what happened to all the car dealers wiped out in the reorganization of GM and Chrysler. The Republican plan was that all of them would be wiped out. Obama saved most of them, but they still won't vote for him because, you know, he's a socialist. The managerial class I mentioned earlier are the well-paid people who made all this happen. The hedge fund managers, the corporate executives who oversee mergers and acquisitions, the media celebrities who get eight-figure salaries to lie to us convincingly that we're all capitalists, and the liberals who built this country are dangerous and hate America. History is rewritten on a daily basis, and facts are just opinions to be contradicted with talking points. The Soviet Union had a managerial class. Technically, there were no rich people in the USSR, but the people at the top lived like they were rich, while working people got uniform poverty and called it socialism. Here, the managerial class is well on its way to having everything under the control of the corporate state, as opposed to the Soviet state. But the outcome is the same. The working people will have uniform poverty. But here, we'll call it capitalism. PrairieNumeral2.com. The other interesting piece. piece of garbage news this week that I think most of us found amusing was Michelle Bachmann announced again that she's running for the presidency of the United States of America. Well, either her or Palin, which one would you rather have? Plus, I have something interesting that was sent to me. About what's going to occur or what is being planned. You may want to file this away someplace. Something is being planned for October 10th this year. October 10th. National strike for the American and working classes on 10-10-11, October 10th, 2011. I'll have some more on this in a minute. Before the hour, I'll get to Crazy Eyes Bachmann in a minute. Reg just sent me this thing. It is tomorrow. It was the Independent of the UK on their website. This is what it says. Efforts by pro-Palestinian activists to challenge Israel's blockade of Gaza appeared increasingly doubtful yesterday amid reports that Greece was preventing several ships from leaving port to join a convoy bound for the Palestinian territory. Greek authorities have delayed the departure of five or six boats, according to the Israeli news site Ynet, as Israel lobbies governments to warn their citizens against joining this flotilla. About 350 activists on 10 ships had planned to sail for the besieged Palestinian enclave of Gaza in an effort to challenge Israel's land and sea blockade, which they say is illegal and inhumane. But those numbers could now be much smaller if the ships, some of which are carrying humanitarian supplies, are prevented from leaving Greece. Problems initially arose with the flotilla participants last week, when Audacity of Hope, a U.S.-owned ship, was barred from leaving Athens for a Greek island after suggestions that it was not seaworthy. It later emerged that an Israeli legal group had submitted a complaint stating that the ship was not fit to sail, obliging the Greek authorities to inspect the ship before allowing it to leave. An Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman, Yigal Palmor, said yesterday that the group that filed this complaint was acting independently of the government. But now several other ships are facing delays to their departure following complaints submitted to the Greeks, according to Jane Hirschman, an activist with the Free Gaza Movement. Hirschman, an American Jew sailing on the U.S. boat, said, quote, "Israel is trying to stop the boats through administrative hurdles. Nobody really knows what's going on. We don't have much clarity, but everybody is determined to leave for Gaza," end quote. Meanwhile, a French boat and an Irish ship have managed to leave port. Israel has mounted an international diplomatic offense to halt the convoy, which includes among its participants politicians, writers, and an 87-year-old Holocaust survivor. A number of countries, including the United States, have warned their citizens not to take part. Israel has warned activists that it has the right to self-defense. The Israeli Navy has been instructed to prevent the convoy from entering Gaza's territorial waters while avoiding casualties. Right. Well, we did everything we could. Will be the answer. I wonder what's going to happen. The complete betrayal on the part of Obama. See, once again, I started the program tonight talking about his absolute cowardice, Obama's, where it concerned the efforts by a group of citizens, a certain classification of citizens, classified by the dominant culture, that this classification of citizens should not be allowed equal protection under the law. Specifically, where it concerns the right to write a contract of marriage. And Obama, in what I'm beginning to believe is pure out-and-out cowardice, it's not trying to reach across the aisle, and every time he does, somebody bites his hand off. It seems like this guy has 90 hands. It's cowardice. He's terrified. He's not a leader. But first with the gay marriage thing, and now with this. And for Hillary Clinton. Well, I don't know why I'm saying it that way, because Hillary Clinton has relied on contributions from some of the most ardent American Zionists on record in the country to win her Senate campaign and to have launched a couple of years ago her presidential campaign. But we have an American president and American Secretary of State saying to people who want to sail from a foreign port through international waters to Gaza that you may be attacked, and if you are attacked, you're on your own. Son of a bitch! What? Really? American citizens sailing through international waters in a symbolic... These are not people going in on warships, for Christ's sake. They're going in on ratty-ass boats, apparently. That's what the Greek government says. What are they taking? Weaponry? Missiles? No, they're not. They're taking food and medicine and construction supplies and letters. And the Israeli government has more or less threatened to blow them out of the water. Have they said that? No, they haven't said that. The threat is very implicit, though. It's like the Palestinian people, by virtue of their geography, are condemned. Geography is destiny in this case. In this little patch of land that the... Jews from around the world at the end of World War II converged on and said, this is our country. Get out. By virtue, and that's according to before he was assassinated, Meir Kahane. And Rabbi Meir Kahane. And to the Palestinians who were not forced out or did not flee, they have lived more or less the same way South African blacks lived under South African white rule. And any attempt to upset that order is met with threats, intimidation, and now our two top foreign relations officers, the president and the secretary of state, have said to American citizens, you're on your own. And you wonder why I look at Barack Obama as a coward and unable to lead? Are you kidding me? back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. Now, this thing, 10-10-11, October 10th, coming. The website for this, I just got this today. The website is nationalstrike.wordpress.com. nationalstrike.wordpress.com. It starts out with stuff you already know about bank CEOs and other executives that have bankrupted pretty much everything. And when you get through the rhetoric, and I'm not using the term rhetoric in a negative sense. When you get through the copy on the press release, and you get down to the top income bracket as recently as 1980 used to pay 70% income tax, and now they pay less than the middle and working classes who have borne the brunt of carrying this economy too long. There are no jobs. The foreclosures and mortgage fraud continues like a plague on the people of this country. Wages have stagnated for over two decades, more like three and a half, really. Wages have fallen even further since the collapse, and employers are taking advantage and exploiting the situation. Enough. We need a national strike. Now, they're not asking for a million people in the street, which I think it's going to take, but what they're asking for is just on Monday, October 10th, no work, no spending. They say the people in other countries are taking it to the streets when their governments and societies are corrupt and non-responsive. Fact is, we must do this too. The country belongs to us. Well, at the same time, they're not calling for people to take to the street. They're mentioning that other countries do it. But all they're asking is October 10th, no work, no spending. I will continue to reference this. I wonder if it will take root. If there's no work and no spending, what are you going to do on that day? Well, let's put 5 million people in the streets of America. No? Okay, 10 million. You think that'll happen? You know, I've been saying for 5 years, 6 years, what's it going to take? What is it going to take to get people in this country to realize that continuing with our passive victim-like attitude about everything. Well, yeah, my jobs are gone. Oh, well, there's nothing I can do. Yeah, my union got busted up. Well, nothing I can do. Yeah, I lost my home. Nothing I can do. Yeah, I lost my health insurance. Nothing I can do. Yeah, they're coming after the car. Nothing I can do. Yeah, there's just nothing I can do. When are we going to understand that learned helplessness? You know, we had a decade of these sons of bitches in the Bush crime family telling us over and over again the same thing that Goebbels and, who was the other one? Was it Himmler? Who understood perfectly. Convince your population there is this hideous external threat and you can get them to do anything. Govern them with fear. For 10 years we've had this. First the Bush crime family and now Obama. Fear. 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 But the 8 years of the Bush crime family completely stripped whatever courage or the ability to say no, hell no, that we used to have right out of the American public. Did you notice that? October 10th. We'll see what happens. Let's see what happens. Michelle Bachmann. This is a woman who You know, I look at the dynamic duo that the Republican Party's put out there, Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann. Sarah Palin is just a moron. I mean, there are Republican female politicians or would-be politicians who are brilliant. Who understand government. Who, while they are Republicans, would be willing to govern for the most part from, God, do I say this? Do I dare say this? The moderate center. But Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann are not two of those people. Palin is so goddamn ignorant. And she's not doing anything except doing what she always wanted to be. She wanted to be a rock star. She has no talent, but she wanted to be a rock star. And between the McCain campaign and the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization, she's achieved it. She's a rock star. She's getting rich. Her daughter, Palin, or what's her daughter's name? Bristol has a book out. I wonder who wrote that. I mean, the family is doing exactly the American dream for stupid people, and that is to become a rock star. And I'm not talking about a musician. Come on, you know what I mean, a generic term. I'm not talking about real rock stars, for Christ's sake. I'm talking about, you know, that syndrome, rock star. Well, I have no talent, so I'm going to be famous for being famous. Like Paris Hilton is, I guess, a good example. I'm just going to be famous for being famous. I can do nothing. Well, Paris Hilton can make a porno tape with her boyfriend, but, you know, for the most part, I can do nothing. I have no talent. I'm useless. So I've got to figure out a way to be famous, because then I'll be rich. Okay, well, Sarah Palin figured it out. Michelle Bachmann, on the other hand, is probably one of the most functionally illiterate when it comes to history and politics person who ever had the gall to offer themselves up as a candidate for anything beyond, I don't know, a county commission someplace in Minnesota, which also would be beyond her ability to handle. I've never seen anything like this. And once again, our crack political media, or our political media on crack, however you want to phrase it, are paying attention to her as if she mattered. As if she had something to offer. You know what her latest gaffe was? Where is this? Oh, yeah, on Fox News Sunday. She said the following, quote, "Well, what I want them to know is, just like John Wayne was from Waterloo, Iowa, that's the kind of spirit that I have, too." Oops. John Wayne was born in Winterset, Iowa, about 3 hours away, moved to California in his childhood. However, John Wayne Gacy, convicted of killing 33 men and boys, was born in Chicago, moved to Waterloo to work in his father-in-law's chicken restaurants, ran afoul of the law there, sentenced to 10 years for sodomy. He began his killing spree after his release. So she mixes up John Wayne with John Wayne Gacy. I mean, like I said, this is the most culturally, politically, and historically ignorant individual ever to declare that they were going to be president. What'd she say today? Obama's afraid of her? Obama may be a lot of things, and he may be afraid of Republicans and afraid to assert himself and be a leader, but, well, maybe he is.
Siphon up your life.
you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
Michelle Bachman, AP, has this article about, she claims that she has never gotten a penny from a family farm that's been subsidized by the government, but her financial disclosure statements show tens of thousands of dollars in personal income from just exactly that kind of an operation. And but this bit about John Wayne and John Wayne Gacy Jr., it's just astonishing. Bachman said last month that a NATO airstrike killed as many as 30,000 Libyan civilians. Now, as much as you or I are adamantly opposed to this assault, this attack on Libya, the 30,000 people killed in an airstrike? No, it was 30,000 people was the estimate that Gaddafi, his military, his forces, that they had killed, people who were resisting or trying to overthrow his government. And numbers like that get a bit dodgy to begin with. But for Bachman to say that a NATO airstrike killed, what the hell were they using? A nuclear bomb, for Christ's sake? But she, it doesn't matter. Her lies about the healthcare law. Examining 24 of her statements, PolitiFact.com, Pulitzer Prize-winning fact-checking service of the St. Petersburg Times, 24 of her statements found one to be true, 17 to be false. No other Republican candidate whose statements have been vigorously vetted matched this record of inaccuracy. I mean, it's madness, and yet the media pay attention to her as if she had something to say politically to the American public. She doesn't have a goddamn thing to say, except look at me. Aren't I an asswipe? That's what she has to say. Watch me. Yeah. I'll show you how stupid somebody really can be. On Fox News Sunday, Bachman. The farm is my father-in-law's farm. It's not my husband and my farm. It's my father-in-law's farm. And my husband and I have never gotten a penny of money from the farm. Facts. In personal financial disclosure reports required annually from members of Congress, Bachman reported that she holds an interest in the family farm in Independence, Wisconsin, and with her share worth between $100,000 and $250,000. The farm, which was owned by her father-in-law, produced income for Bachman of at least $32,000 and as much as $105,000. From 2006 through 2009, according to the reports she filed for that period. The farm also received federal crop and disaster subsidies, according to a database maintained by the Environmental Working Group. From 1995 through 2010, the farm got $259,332 in federal payments. When asked about the subsidies and her income from the farm late last year, a spokesman for Bachman said only that she wasn't involved in decisions about running the farm. Jesus Christ. On CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday, Bachman, quote, "It's ironic and sad that the president released all of the oil from the Strategic Oil Reserve. There's only a limited amount of oil that we have in the Strategic Oil Reserve. It's there for emergencies," end quote. fact, Obama did not empty all the oil from the strategic reserve, as Bachman said. He approved the release of 30 million barrels, about 4% of the 727 million barrels stored in salt caverns along the Texas-Louisiana coasts. 96% of the oil in reserve is still in reserve. Bachman, quote, comment to a conservative conference in March. She said, one, that's the number of new drilling permits under the Obama administration since they came into office. One. The facts? The Obama administration issued more than 200 new drilling permits before the Gulf oil spill alone. Over the past year, since new safety standards were imposed, the administration has issued more than 60 more drilling permits. One?
A form of suicide. Republican side! And the swallow skims without a thought, as long as it is spring. But when spring pours and winter blows, my lassie, you'll be fain for all your pride to follow me across the stormy main.
25 before the hour. George in Oregon writes regarding Bachman and Palin, Americans like ignorance. Way too many Americans don't want anybody smarter than they are in the White House, like Bush. Ignorance is curable. Stupidity isn't. Both Palin and Bachman are stupid, along with way too many of our fellow Americans. Remember, the Nazis were elected. They didn't take over in a coup. Yeah, that's true. And then, who sent this? From Australia, a friend from Australia. JY Design. He quotes Matt Taibbi, I guess from the Rolling Stone article, just a quick croak. Quote, but don't laugh. Don't do it. And don't look in her eyes. Don't let her smile at you. Michelle Bachman, when she turns her head toward the cameras and brandishes her pearls and her ageless, unblemished neckline and her perfect suburban orthodontics in an attempt to reassure the unbeliever of her non-threateningness, is one of the scariest sights in the entire American cultural tableau. She's trying to look like June Cleaver, but she actually looks like the Terminator 2 skeleton posing for a passport photo. You will want to laugh, but don't. Because the secret of Bachman's success is that every time you laugh at her, she gets stronger. So I went online and got side-by-side pictures of June Cleaver and the T2 skeleton. Taibbi's right. Look at this, Kathy. They look, you know, the high cheekbones, the grin. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Another thing I wanted to get to tonight was this ruling by the Supreme Court, a 7-2 ruling. The Supreme Court threw out California's law written in 2005 covering video games sold or rented to those under 18. And the Supreme Court called that law an unconstitutional violation of free speech rights. What this is about, the Supreme Court ruled that states cannot ban the sale or rental of ultra-violent video games to children. They just ruled that today. Rejecting such limits is a violation of young people's First Amendment rights and leaving it up to parents in the multi-billion dollar gaming industry to decide what kids can buy. Oh, my goodness. But the Supreme Court has ruled that a pornographic material can be regulated, or what they consider, you know, sexually explicit videos. The Supreme Court has ruled that states can legally ban children from getting that. But Scalia, who wrote the, Anthony Fat Tony Scalia wrote the majority opinion, he said in his ruling that unlike depictions of sexual conduct, there is no tradition in the United States of restricting children's access to depictions of violence. He noted the violence in the original depictions of many popular children's fairy tales like Hansel and Gretel, Cinderella, and Snow White. Violence in Cinderella? As many times as we've told that story to Molly, is there violence in Cinderella?
Well, I guess there's that scene where the stepsisters rip her dress apart. But that
Scalia is a goddamn maniac. He is a completely insane Opus Dei Catholic who I don't know what he's about. But to say that kids have a legal right to videos depicting ultraviolence. I mean, children, goddammit. We're talking children. But the same children do not have a right to sexually explicit videos. I don't think they should have a right to either one. They're children, for Christ's sake, any more than I think children should own a gun or drive a car or smoke a reefer. I mean, come on. What is wrong with Scalia? This rat bastard has the temerity to suggest that children have a constitutional right to buy blatantly violent, murderous pornography. It is pornography. Violent pornography. California's law would have prohibited anyone under 18 from buying or renting games that give players the option of, quote, killing, maiming, dismembering, or sexually assaulting an image of a human being, end quote. Parents would have been able to buy the games for their children, but retailers who sold directly to minors would have faced fines up to $1,000 for each game sold. So Scalia says that children have a right, and as did six other members of the Supreme Court, children have a right to purchase, little kids. It doesn't say what, it just says children. Well, is there, I guess there's no cutoff. I mean, anyone can buy them. 8-year-old? Oh, I know. Yeah, see, now the right wingers will scream, well, it's the parents' obligation to make sure their children don't buy this. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You show me an enterprising 12-year-old, and I'll show you a person who can get any goddamn thing they want in the society, from pornography to drugs to guns to anything, and their parents will never know a thing about it because the parents are dumb and stupid and bad? No, because the great American marketing machine has figured out ways to get anything into the hands of anybody if the price is right. Where the hell does Scalia live? What kind of a freak is this guy? What sense? Stephen Breyer and Clarence Thomas were the two dissenters. How does that grab you? Breyer said it makes no sense to legally block children's access to pornography and yet allow them to buy or rent brutally violent video games. He said, quote, what sense does it make to forbid selling to a 13-year-old boy a magazine with an image of a nude woman while protecting the sale to that 13-year-old of an interactive video game in which he actively, but virtually, binds and gags the woman, then tortures and kills her. End quote, Stephen Breyer. Seven to two. That means all your liberals voted to allow this. Hansel and Gretel kill their captor by baking her in an oven. Cinderella's evil stepsisters have their eyes pecked out by doves. Boy, not the versions we've ever given to Molly. And the evil queen in Snow White is forced to wear red-hot slippers and dance until she's dead, Scalia said. What the hell kind of crap was Scalia fed when he was a kid? I never heard of this. Oh, I'm sure probably in the original fairy tales from Middle Europe, perhaps that's that was the case. But oh my God, since when has any Snow White book, movie, story contained a bit about the queen forcing to dance until she's dead? Or Cinderella's stepsisters having their eyes pecked out by doves? Jesus Christ. That's Cheney. Ted Winter, president of the Parents Television Council, said the decision created a constitutionally authorized, quote, end run on parental authority, end quote. He said, quote, I wonder what other First Amendment right does a child have against their parents' wishes? Does the child now have a constitutional right to bear arms if their parents don't want them to buy a gun? How far does this extend? It's certainly concerning to us that something as simple as requiring a parental oversight to purchase an adult product has been undermined by the court. End quote. Scalia is a goddamn maniac. I mean, by any definition, he is a maniac. This is what happens when you get too far into this crazed, super bloody Catholicism, you know? I mean, a kid has a right to go see The Passion of the Christ, right? Wildfire that was burning out of control about a mile from the Los Alamos National Laboratory has been stopped for tonight. Officials there said in a statement that all harmful materials have been surveyed and properly stowed. Oh, really? A statement from the lab said, quote, overnight, as a precaution, the lab cut natural gas to technical areas in the LANL's remote southwest area. All hazardous and radioactive materials remain accounted for and are appropriately protected as our key lab facilities, such as its proton accelerator and supercomputing centers, end quote. Boom. Really? At the government of New Mexico's request, well, first of all, the governor, Susana Martinez, or Martinez, I don't know how she pronounces it, Susana Martinez deployed National Guard troops to assist in evacuations and any emergency response and said firefighters are using burnouts to clear the area of fuel for the fire around the lab, you know, backfires or however you want to say it, burnouts. At the governor's request, the Federal Emergency Management Agency issued a fire management assistance grant, which will pay 75% of the firefighting costs. Oh, no, you don't. Not unless you find some place to cut the budget, goddammit. Oh, no. No, 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 no. No grants. Not unless there is a corresponding cut in, oh, I don't know, the Women, Infants, and Children Feeding Program. Grant? What the hell is a fire man? You see how this works? You see how this works? You see how much the federal government really is needed? Federal government, bad. States, good. Well, if that's the case, why is the state of New Mexico requesting, demanding, begging for, pleading with FEMA to get them some money, which will cover 75% of the firefighting costs? Huh? What's up with that? The lab's emergency operations center remains operational, and observation aircraft have been deployed to monitor the fire's growth and size. Notice all the fires. How could you not? All the fires. We got them down here in South Georgia now, too. Fire. Fire. Isn't that a Doors song? Fire. But none of these fires, listen up, none of these fires has a thing to do with global climate change. And don't you believe any pissy liberal that tells you it does. And in Brownville, Nebraska, operators of the nuclear reactor in that town have spent days working to defend it against the Missouri River. Yesterday, 8 days after the river rose high enough to require the operators to declare a low-level emergency. Isn't that a contradiction in terms? A low-level emergency? What the hell is a low-level emergency? Jesus God. I mean, it's either an emergency or it isn't. That's like jumbo shrimp, right? A low-level emergency. A swarm of plant officials got to show off their preparations to the chairman of the NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Oh, that isn't that nice. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, whose rules and regulations are written by the nuclear industry. Oh, you got to love it, don't you? Unless you live in Nebraska. Well, unless you live anyplace. The reactor, Cooper Station, is one of two nuclear plants in Missouri that are threatened by flooding. The second reactor, Fort Calhoun, 85 miles further north, came under increased pressure for a brief period on Sunday. Before dawn, a piece of heavy equipment nicked an 8-foot-high, 2,000-foot-long temporary rubber berm, and it deflated. Water began to approach electrical equipment, which prompted operators to cut themselves off from the grid and start up diesel generators. They went back on the power grid later yesterday. Both nuclear plants appeared prepared to weather the flooding, their operators and federal government regulators said. Oh, well, that's reassuring. The operators of the plant, who is that, TEPCO? and the regulators, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, that is nothing more or less than a rubber stamp agency for the nuclear industry. And if you don't believe that, I've got a bridge in Fukushima that I'd like to sell you. My God. Well, things are getting interestinger and interestinger, aren't they? Huh? You're in the age of post-Bush, deep into Obama territory. All Obama had to do to, A, stimulate the economy, B, put millions of people back to work, and C, start rebuilding our infrastructure that desperately needs it, including the decommission of some of these nuclear power plants that are just on the verge. I mean, we're going to have one in this country. You know we are. We're going to have a nuclear emergency that's going to take an awful lot of lives. You know it's coming. To get all that done, you know what Obama had to do? Take out his pen and sign an order laying out all the specifics and then dare the House not to fund it. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.